Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Feeling cold is contagious, scientists find, University of Sussex. Just looking at someone shivering is enough to make us feel cold, according to the latest research. Why is that? And does it work in other areas as well? Yes, it does. I'll explain that. We have a lot on health and healing to explain. Also today, I'll be sharing an article with you, a commentary, based upon my concerns that some of the better voices in our society, better in the sense of better understanding from a long period of work in the field, such as Chris Hedges, Cornel West, other people, they've been around long enough, they've been in the trenches long enough to see what works and what does not work. Protests do work, especially when they're legitimate protests, and we need change. What does not work, what is counterproductive, is violence, burning down people's businesses, hurting people, physically assaulting them, and then trying to take over universities' curriculums, getting the administrations to bow down to this new woke culture. And then how the Democrats and their leadership are using this to, as a cudgel, to keep the population so concerned that they're not paying attention to what both the Democrats and Republicans have not done, which is how about nothing constructive from either party in decades. In fact, everything they do has been counterintuitive and counterproductive. So I decided to right, along with Richard Gale, our woke culture of nihilism. Please share it with everyone you can, because I can assure you this is not going to be shared by the mainstream media. That is part of the problem. Also today, and all next week, I'm going to be bringing you some of the finest scientific minds in the world, Nobel Prize winners. On our next program, we're going to have two of the best scientists from Oxford University, as well as the head of the Cochrane Group, Dr. Thomas Jefferson, talking about wearing masks. You will hear, and I don't know of any scientist on the planet that has done as much work as Dr. Jefferson. And he says, and you'll hear him say it, there's no scientific evidence masks work, period, because we haven't done the research. So we're making just political decisions based upon suppositions, but there's no evidence to back it up. To the contrary, and he'll explain how wearing a mask and the humidity and the saliva in a mask and the exhaled air can actually contribute to make it more porous. You also hear them talk about how humidity is good for killing the coronavirus, but in a winter, it is not. You'll hear scientists talk about how the statistics, including a Nobel Prize winner from Stanford University, that what we've been basing political decisions on, lockdown, quarantine, are wrong. They don't have the science, and they've misread the actual statistics. And he is a biostatistician and won his Nobel Prize in it. And he's saying everything we're doing is wrong because they got everything wrong from the beginning. So every day I'm going to share with you deconstructing the myth of this. Now, I did the same thing back in 1983, 84, and right through for the next 35 years about AIDS, everything we got wrong about AIDS. Yeah, there is an HIV virus. And there are 30 conditions we say this single virus causes. And there's only one test you can take, which is an antibody test. But there's a person that owns that test, Robert Gallo. And the test insert, the actual insert on the package, says, do not use this test to determine if you're HIV positive. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Then why use the test? Well, that's what happens when you can control and capture an entire field, as Gallo and Anthony Fauci did. So, yeah, I'm challenging Anthony Fauci. I'm challenging him on everything he says. And I'm especially challenging the fact that he was one of the senior authors on an article that showed that chloroquine worked at killing the SARS-CoV virus. And by the way, we're going to show you another drug that's inexpensive, non-toxic, that also works, something you've never heard about. And I'm going to give you the physician behind it, and then two more physicians around the world. And what didn't work originally was they were using too high a doses, 2,400 milligrams, when it's 200 milligrams twice a week, not 2,400 milligrams a day, but also using zinc activates it in a way that helps in the channeling, and you'll hear about this today, to allow the hydroxychloroquine to kill the virus in this case, in 100% of the patients. But there's another drug that killed 100% of the COVID virus in its patients. And these were patients who were sick. So you see, none of this information are you getting. Why? The media has been captured by the pharmaceutical companies that are looking to make the biggest killing in world history. More money will change hands between Bill Gates' foundation and all the companies that he has invested in, plus Anthony Fauci and the National Institutes of Health and the companies they control the patent and who manufactures the products. We're talking about trillions of dollars. Never before, for any project, has anyone made that kind of money. Instantly. That's just the beginning. And then there'll be the mandatory tests. They'll make money off that. And by the way, we're going to show you later that the tests, not once have they been shown to be an accurate gold standard test. They're doing junk testing. So anyhow, that's why it's so important to realize freedom of speech, freedom of choice, and having a place where you can come. And whether you agree or disagree, in part or whole, at least you're going to get information. And as a scientist and as a journalist, I take very seriously my work. And as a result, the goal is to empower the listeners every day. What they do with that information is up to them. But at least you're going to get information that I would never, ever share the muck and mire of misinformation and fake news that all of the other channels engage in on a daily basis. That's our program today. But we start with something very simple, the power of suggestion. I'm going to give you two examples of this. First, we have the study from the University of Sussex. And the Brighton and Sussex Medical School shows that humans are susceptible to temperature contagion. That's what they're calling it. And a neuropsychiatrist, Dr. Neil Harrison, who led the research, suggests that such unconscious physiological changes may help us emphasize that we are very susceptible to how other people are reacting in our environment, the communities we live in. So mimicking another person is believed to help us create an internal model of their physiological state, which we can use to better understand their motivations and how they're feeling. Humans are profoundly social creatures, and much of human success results in our ability to work together in complex communities. But I also say this works in primate communities too. I remember two little primates that I rescued. Their mothers abandoned them, and they would have died. And we don't know why they're abandoned, but this happens on a regular basis. In any case, I had to raise them as if I was their mother, feeding them 10 times a day, changing their diapers, giving them a bath, bonding with them. And even people weren't aware of this, but when I was doing my radio show for about 3 years, every day I had a little pocket sewn on my T-shirt, and both of them, they're so small, two of them can fit in the palm of your hand. They never utter a word, no sound at all for at the beginning. And I believe that's instinctual because in nature, any sound, any movement could get the notice of let's say in the trees, of a python or a constricting snake or of a predator. So in any case, when they were grown, and one was called Buddha, the other Sweetie. And with Buddha, he's very quiet and contemplative. He'll watch, he'll analyze things. And so I went in, and I went in one day with bottled water, and I unscrewed the lid, and I drank some and screwed the back on, set it down. And then I went out of his enclosure. I turned around, he went over, he took the bottle, held it upright, unscrewed it, drank from it, screwed it back on, set it down. So animals also will follow behavioral patterns. And when people say something, they may be saying it in all earnest, but we take it on the same way. And I'll show you a different way this works. There were a group of us who loved going around the world doing the first marathons, like the first London Marathon. We did that, and the Montreal Marathon, the Marine Corps, the Los Angeles, San Francisco, Long Island, all these marathons, and the Jamaica Marathon. And in doing the Jamaica Marathon, I knew that it was going to be very hot and humid because I had visited Jamaica about 30 times. Wonderful country, phenomenal people, loving, sensitive, easy living, and even when they're poor. And family is very important. Morality is very important. You don't hear about that. You hear about the gangs in Kingston or Montego Bay, and that doesn't represent the people. In any case, I'm thinking we better train as if this is under the worst case scenario. So we did. And we would run in the park when it was hot with sweats on, and we would run up the steps with 25 flights 25 times with a gallon of water. It's 18 pounds carrying it up the steps. And one of the persons says, why? Why are we doing this? I can't breathe. I said, well, what if happens if you got a 95-degree or 100-degree day and it's humid? And your lungs are not used to it. You're not used to it. Your brain is going to tell your body, shut down this effort, and you're just going to slow down and stop. So sure enough, we all trained. And when we got down there, the race was delayed several hours. And sure enough, it had rained that morning. So exactly as I predicted, it was like 98 degrees and humid 100%. And when we went out, at the first table, there was no water. At the second table, there was no water. Now we're 9 miles into this race, and we hadn't had a drop of water. In fact, we went the entire race with no water. But I anticipated that. So we trained going 18 miles at full pace, running around Central Park in 6 mile per hour training with no water until we were absolutely exhausted. That paid off, because guess who finished the race? All of us. Four of us, all medaled. Sam Skinner and I both got a gold medal, and two other people both got medals in their categories as well, not just for finishing race, for winning. So we train differently. So now jump forward. So now someone says, "Oh, it's cold," and everybody then starts to shiver. What if you went just the opposite direction? No, I'm very comfortable. So the takeaway message is, someone may be having a real experience, but it doesn't need to be your experience. They don't need to be, let's just say, you know, they're angry. You don't need to be angry. They're feeling helpless. You don't need to feel helpless, but rather hopeful. So you can change a lot of these negatives into positives. From the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School comes a study about mycotoxins, mycotoxins. It's the hidden hormone danger in our food supply. Over 30 years ago, scientists observed mycotoxin-contaminated animal feed, meaning the grains, interfering with normal sexual development in young female pigs, resulting in estrogenic syndrome and precarious puberty. More recent human research in the United States also confirms that the contamination of our food supply with fungal toxins is adversely affecting the sexual development of young girls. So grains, once considered the foundation of our food pyramid, and still a key component is important, have recently come under scrutiny due to their purported evolutionary incompatibility, meaning generally with the paleo diet and ancestral diets, which I disagree with, and their co-option by biotechnology and agriculture corporations, mainly Monsanto and Franklin Corn, as well as the fact that they convert to sugar within the body. So you don't want to have refined grains, because then you're going to have a rush of sugar, and that's really not good for diabetics or pre-diabetics. And there's a whole long laundry list. For example, if you don't store your grains properly, mold can occur, mold that you won't even see. That's why rule one: always wash thoroughly in a colander all of your grains, brown rice, everything that you're going to, you know, quinoa, rinse it thoroughly. Then you boil it, and that will kill off these mycotoxins. But a lot of people are on raw foods diets and end up with, first of all, I would never eat raw food in a raw food restaurant because you don't know if anything in there was contaminated by improperly washing it or not washing it at all. And therefore, you don't want one of those contaminations. So I never eat anything raw when I'm out. At home, yes, because I know my hygiene. So both organic and conventional varieties can be contaminated. So just take your time and wash the grains thoroughly. And also, it helps to have garlic and onions and shallots because they help also reduce mycotoxins in the body. Vitamin C does as well. And just so you understand, a mycotoxin, these are toxic secondary metabolites produced by organisms of the fungi kingdom, commonly known as molds. So if you eat grains or grain-fed animal products, there's a good chance you're already being exposed because mold infestation and mycotoxin contamination affects as much as 1/4 of the global food and feed supply. And in fact, when someone was having a problem with their animals at an animal sanctuary and asked my advice, I said, all your grains should be refrigerated and dated. Oh, really? Yes. And I said, because you're going to have mold, and that mold's going to be very problematic in your animals, and that's probably why they're having problems. Also, you're not putting a bleach pad outside your environment, so when you step into their enclosure to clean it down with hydrogen peroxide or alcohol each day, all the surface areas and their ropes, your feet are contaminated, so you're cross-contaminating. They're on the floor. They're licking their hands. Simple things you would think that people would know. Don't assume anything. And by the way, if you don't think it's a big deal, as recently as 2004 in Kenya, an outbreak of aflatoxicosis caused by aflatoxin contamination in corn resulted in 125 deaths. And every year in the United States, between water pollution and food pollution poisoning, over 150 million cases of people getting either water pollution and poisoning or food poisoning. And a lot of that has to do with contaminants from animal-based products. And by the way, mycotoxins are also endocrine disruptors, and that is not good. So that's just some of the things today. We are 18 minutes into our program. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to go to a clip. And in this clip, we're going to hear about a new, well, it's not new, but new to our audience. And I'm going to spell it for you. IVERMECTIN. It's just a FDA-approved drug. It's been around a long time. And it had 100% cure rate with COVID patients and no harmful side effects. The professor using it will be, you'll be hearing him. And again, you're not going to hear about this. And he'll tell you why. Because you can't patent this. You can't patent any of these other drugs that are killing the COVID virus. Because if you acknowledge they work, then you would say, well, what's the point of a vaccine? You don't need a vaccine. And then if you give the, let's say, the hydroxychloroquine at 200 milligrams with zinc and an antibiotic in the at the beginning of a person having symptoms, then you stop that. So we could have saved over 100,000 lives in the United States, but we didn't make a health decision. We made political decisions. Everything now has been completely... COVID has been completely weaponized. I wouldn't believe a single thing anyone told me. Oh, and by the way, I heard, hopefully I heard incorrectly from a good source, that de Blasio will be closing down New York in September for 4 to 6 weeks. Hopefully that's misinformation. We'll see if it is or isn't. And think of what that's going to do to the small businesses that have opened again, paying their back rent, re-inventorying, it would just cause massive destruction. And for my brother, who is one of the most informed people on small businesses in the tri-state area, or certainly in the five boroughs, he says that over 3,000 small businesses closed permanently in New York City, and it's going to get a lot worse. So that would be a death knell. There'd be no reason for anyone to stay in New York. There isn't right now, I believe. I believe get the hell out of New York State, because when mandatory vaccines come and you have no choice, and there's roadblocks with armed guards not going to allow you in, that's de Blasio's latest edict, then you realize, wow, it got that bad? Yeah, it got that bad. So we're coming back and giving you good news, positive news. Write it down, IVERMECTIN. It is a common drug, and you will not hear a word about this in the mainstream media, or certainly not from Anthony Fauci, because the fix is in. They want you to pay for $3,000 treatments for a drug and vaccines. And all that is wrong. Please stay with us.
It is, and what you've seen of its effect on coronavirus patients.
Okay, so it's available as a prescription medication. You wouldn't use it alone. You want to reduce the dose that was done in the test tube, but you add two other things to it, such as doxycycline and zinc. And because I'm involved in the development of these in the US, where all the patients are, there are a number of studies that are amazingly successful. We're talking close to 100%. In fact, we haven't seen a result yet under 100%. It looks like corona. It is very simple to kill.
Very simple to kill. Now, have you seen this in Australian patients? Can you tell us of any examples of people, how sick they were and how rapidly this drug has worked?
No, we have not started using this in Australian patients. We've used it in the US, and the access that I have is where we had a 14-hospital trial in Bangladesh. We got 100 out of 100. In China, they tried to reproduce it. They got 60 out of 60 cured, compared with slightly less impressive hydroxychloroquine result. So I am behind the ivermectin doxycycline zinc treatment because it has very few side effects and is a real killer of coronavirus.
And is ivermectin prescribed commonly in Australian aged care settings already for other problems?
Yes, it is prescribed for scabies, for example. We use it for stercoralis in gastroenterology, and it's been well used overseas for various parasites, especially South America, Africa. And in South America, for example, they will treat a whole block of people in a city, and not one person catches coronavirus. Other blocks do. So I think it's time that we took a very serious look and started treating people in Victoria with flying teams that would treat the aged care home people, frontline workers, and that those who are found positive for COVID. And if we start seeing within a week or two, fewer and fewer going to hospital, we'll have an answer very rapidly without having to go to very long and twisted trials.
I'll come back to that suggestion in just a moment. But first up, sure. You're saying that this drug works both as a preventative from infection and as a cure for people who are already suffering symptoms.
Correct.
But what you're saying now is this drug is ready and safe for use in Victoria. You'd like to see government and medical authorities adopt its use now. Won't people suggest that we need to await proper clinical trials in this country?
Well, there's so much published on trials and we have deaths happening that we should set up a Team Victoria, in fact, a Team Australia, bring people in from other states and identify anyone who's positive and treat them. And those who are around them, give them half dose preventative treatment And those who are in the front lines, they should all be on the preventative, because the side effects are so minuscule, really, that I don't really know why we haven't started treating before.
Well, a similar
aged care homes, you know.
It's similar to the debate about hydroxychloroquine, because the drug's been around so long and you know about the side effects, you know it's safe to use, there's not much risk is there in actually attempting these trials to see what sort of an effect you can get.
Look, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin versus ivermectin, it's apples and oranges. I would only support ivermectin.
And tell us about the other medical support you're getting here. Any other organisations pushing for this? Are governments listening? What are the next steps here? Because there is a sense of urgency in Victoria in particular.
Well, it's used a lot in India. The government north of Australia, you know, has talked to us about treating the recent spike that occurred in Port Moresby and around this area. And I think there are those who see that you can't go wrong trying something that has been reported in virtually 100% cure rate and no percent side effects, like 4% had headaches. Excuse me. Why don't we use it? I have doctors who take it as prophylactic here in Australia, and there's so many in the US who take it, but that doesn't come out in the news, although I can get you to speak with people in the US who are physicians who developed COVID. They get fevers, headaches, they lose this sense of smell and taste, and within 24 hours, the fevers and headaches and the sore throats disappear. It's a very rapidly acting treatment in clinical medicine.
Finally, Professor, on this, I've looked at some of the material, at some of the studies today. It does strike me as surprising we haven't heard more about this. Do you understand why we haven't heard more about this, why there isn't more awareness, why perhaps governments in particular aren't focusing more on this?
Well, I have pondered this, and I think one of the best answers is that there is no big pharmaceutical company behind it. You know, if I was to join a team to try and get people not to go to hospital, I won't make any money out of it. I'm not interested because it's cheap. It's rapidly available now. We won't run out of it like we did with the hydroxychloroquine. But there is no huge pharmaceutical company behind it to spend millions of dollars and put people in places to treat. So it just didn't get a lot of airing, I guess. But now it has happened because we've got some disaster happening, especially in Victoria. So we need to give people hope for Victoria.
Thomas, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Mind you, you've not heard about this drug before. You heard the MD and professor, he's one and the same, talk about it. 100% cure in every test, including in China, and not a word in the mainstream media. That shows you the abrogation of responsibility for the media to do its homework. It won't do it. And therefore, you should walk away from the media, walk away from all the media, because they're all biased. But they'll never honor that. Though there was someone who quit MSNBC. If I have time, I'll report on that because of how bad they are and how political they are, how ideological they are. And this person just couldn't take it anymore. In any case, that's one example, but we have more. And mind you, we would have been using hydroxychloroquine a long time ago. It cost pennies per tablet. But first off, they scared people with a study, two studies. Both of those studies were published, one in the New England Journal of Medicine, one in the Lancet. Both had to be retracted. They were fraudulent studies. So why wasn't anyone held accountable for publishing a fraudulent study? And the actual authors of the study retracted it. They didn't want their name associated when they tried to get the details, and there were no details to do their analysis on. So that's one thing. Separately, when you're giving 2,400 milligrams of a hydroxychloroquine to a patient by itself, you can get a toxic reaction, especially to the heart. But when you give it at 200 milligrams, you know, the 2,000% difference, that is 1,000% difference, that is what they didn't do. Also, they didn't use an antibiotic and they didn't use zinc. And zinc is crucial to use that with hydroxychloroquine. And now all the patients are getting better. It has a very high level of curing the disease, but there's no money in it. Nobody can patent these. Both these drugs were patented no longer. So again, I'll spell it one last time. IVERMECTIN. Okay? Now, I'm going to share another positive study on a Los Angeles doctor seeing success with hydroxychloroquine to treat COVID-19. And this is only 60 seconds. Please listen in.
I do want to ask you about hydroxychloroquine. The president was pushing it pretty strong again yesterday. You said you have prescribed this. I want to talk to you about the effects you're seeing and what it might do for people who take it normally outside of coronavirus and a possible shortage of medicine for them.
Exactly. What we're finding clinically with our patients is that it really only works in conjunction with zinc. So the hydroxychloroquine opens a zinc channel, zinc goes into the cell, it then blocks the replication of the cellular machinery. So it has to be used in conjunction with zinc. We are seeing some clinical responses in that regard. There are people that take it regularly for other disease processes. We have to be cautious and mindful that we don't prescribe it for patients who have COVID that are well. It really should be reserved for people that are really sick in the hospital or at home very sick that need that medication. Otherwise, we're going to blow through our supply for the patients that take it regularly for other disease processes.
But what you're saying is you're prescribing it and it is working for COVID-19 patients.
Every patient I've prescribed it to has been very, very ill. And within 8 to 12 hours, they were basically symptom-free. And so clinically, I am seeing a resolution. That mirrors what we saw in the French study and some of the other studies worldwide. But what I am seeing is that people are taking it alone by itself. It's not having efficacy.
Okay. Wow. That's very interesting news. And hopefully we can get that more widespread. Dr. Anthony Cardillo, thank you so much for your information.
Hello, I'm Mark Brown.
Please keep in mind, these are not alternative doctors. This is not conspiracy theory. These are board certified frontline doctors were using it for themselves and their sick patients. And you have to use it with zinc and the antibiotic to get maximum results. So why aren't we? You're not going to hear this promoted anywhere. In fact, the mainstream media and its cabal of scientists have been attacking this. And they'll attack this ivermectin as well because it's inexpensive. They are in the pockets of Big Pharma, and this is a $1 trillion takeover. And that's why you should be concerned. Now, also, you should be concerned about the vaccine. I'm going to share something verbatim from the Children's Health Defense Team. Quote, components of the mRNA technology could lead to significant adverse events in one or more of our clinical trials. Who says that? Moderna, the Bill Gates-funded, Anthony Fauci-supported pharmaceutical company. Here's what the Children's Health Defense Team found, that the RNA vaccine undergoing COVID-19 clinical trials, including the Moderna vaccine, rely upon nanoparticle-based carrier system containing a synthetic chemical called polyethylene glycol, or PEG. That's a toxicant. I would never allow that to be put into my body. The use of this PEG is called polyethylene glycol in drugs and vaccines is increasingly controversial due to the well-documented evidence of its effects upon your immune system, including life-threatening anaphylaxis. Roughly 7 in 10 Americans may already be sensitized to this chemical, which may result in reduced efficacy of the vaccine and an increase in adverse side effects. And if the PEG-containing RNA vaccine for COVID-19 gains FDA approval, which it will, the uptick in exposure to this polyethylene glycol will be unprecedented and, I believe, potentially dangerous. Now, Moderna's documents and publications indicate that the company is well aware of safety risks associated with this polyethylene glycol and other aspects of its RNA technology, but is more concerned with how much profit they're going to make. In fact, a dozen COVID-19 vaccines are undergoing clinical trials, leading a crowded field that now numbers over 170 companies. Several of the U.S. contenders, Moderna, Pfizer, Biotech, Arcturns Therapeutics, are deploying never-before-approved messenger RNA technology, which is a purely experimental approach designed to turn the body's cells into viral protein-making factories. Just so you're aware, a key technological challenge is to get the vaccine's bulky RNA payload into the cells intact without it breaking down prior to arriving at its destination. In other words, RNA vaccines will not work without an inbuilt delivery mechanism that enables the RNA to shove its way into a cell's cytoplasm. And the chosen solution is to use trendy biotech carrier systems involving lipid nanoparticles. And these lipid nanoparticles encapsulate the RNA constructs to protect them from degradation and promote cellular uptake. And all this is experimental. All of it. Do you want to be the human guinea pig? And why is it that with all the peer-reviewed scientific studies on what will build the immune system, including in people who already have comorbidities, helping people who have obesity and diabetes and emphysema, the people who already are the 80% of all people who die are over 65 with multiple comorbidities. Now, next week, I'm going to play a whole series of discussions with epidemiologists, some of the best in the world, showing that the four countries, including Sweden and Thailand and Japan, that did not close down their society, they ended up with the lowest death rates in the world. In fact, we will show you next week there is no unique spike in overall mortality anywhere in the world. So how did everyone at the CDC and FDA and the Surgeon General, how did the World Health, how did they get it all wrong? Because they're wrong about everything. Yes, it is a virus. Yes, it can kill people. Yes, frontline doctors, nurses are especially susceptible. And that's why I'm recommending not just an N95 mask, but a shield. The shield is going to do far more for you than a mask. Now, you can use both together. But I have the shield, you know, the hat with the shield that comes down. That will stop 100% of particulate matter from hitting your face, especially your nose, your mouth, your mucous membranes. Whereas I'm going to get into this next week in the latest studies, because I do have the latest studies, about the particle size of let's say, a virus versus what will a mask actually filter. It's just a matter of math. You know, if you have a filter that will filter only to a certain degree, but the particle is 10 times smaller than that, the virus or bacteria can go right through the mask. So we're going to deal with this. So wear shields. They're far better, more protected. So anyhow, these pegs are widely used in drugs and personal care products, lubricant, gels, and that's what they use, by the way, when you're getting an ultrasound gel, and food additives. And it's a notorious ingredient for the controversial Bayer laxative, Miralax, a medication used for constipation to prep individuals for colonoscopy. And many parents of chronically constipated children have accused Miralax of provoking severe neuropsychiatric symptoms in their offspring, including mood swings, rage, phobias, and paranoia. And the biopharma and vaccine industries know what it can do. They also don't know what nanoparticles can do, especially with a stealth property, which would allow the particles to evade detection by your immune system and make an end run around the body's ordinary defenses. That is why I'm very concerned about this. Yet they are only seeing profit, and profit is what they'll get. We're going to take a break and come back, and I'm going to share my perspective and Richard Gale's on Welcome to the Woke Culture and its Nihilistic Agenda. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. As we witness the increasing populist persecution of politically correct language through the emerging cancel culture, I believe we should stop and just pause for a moment and reflect. A little introspection is needed, a little patience is needed, and a whole lot more awareness of consequence. What went wrong that in a blink of an eye, so much hatred and disdain and condemnation was unfurled in the streets, the social media, and on college campuses, demanding that tenured professors should be limited in what they say and how it is stated, is counterproductive to understanding that our institutions of higher learning have historically been forms to challenge and rebut ideas and pre-assumptions in order to inspire open dialogue and debate. This is how critical thinking develops. Epigenetically ingrained beliefs and feelings are thereby examined outside the bubbles of culture and class and race and ethnicity, because the real world, frankly, doesn't care about self-centered emotions nor supercilious appeals for focused attention. Previous generations had their moments in the public arena to exhibit their tantrums and hurl vindictive vitriol at their real or imagined enemies. Again, we are witnessing a new generation of youth stamping their feet, beating their chests with self-righteous indignation and screaming for justice. We are inclusive, they say, so they yell. And you are the racist, bigot, misogynist, and deplorable trash, they also yell. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now, they also yell. Not all, but those that are yelling, we hear. But the euphoric high in the current rebellion will be short-lived. Populist rebellions and protests are usually co-opted by more powerful entities eventually, and rarely do revolutions bring about the changes that its participants have idolized. Some scholars have observed a similarity between the current demonstrations of Black Lives Matter and Antifa with the French Revolution. But that too quickly splintered after heralding momentary success into various factions, Robespierre's and Jacobins and Jacques Herbe and George Danton. And where did the revolution and all of its achievements end after Napoleon arrived? It was not sustained. Indeed, successful widespread demonstrations can change the course of history and do trigger systemic change frequently. However, there is no Rosetta Stone that guarantees the desired outcome will be reached. And after the demonstrations have stopped, after some modicum of acceptance has occurred, who amongst those who hurled the stones or set stores on fire will go back and apologize to the store owners and say, I was responsible in my rage for what I thought was justified to burn down your store and to beat you and your family with baseball bats? Who will say that? How about not a single person? It never happens. The belief that we are a systematically racist nation is fundamentally flawed. Otherwise, there would be no achievements from the earlier mass protests, such as the Civil Rights Movement, the early abolitionists, the suffragettes, and the Vietnam War protest. The very idea that the best-selling book, White Fragility, should be the new Bible is a travesty to critical thinking. Yes, it is proper to condemn slavery. Any responsible and spiritual person would do so without any cajoling or reminding. But the premise that being born white is an irreversible and unredeemable trait of racism coded in our DNA as a biological sin is not only juvenile and ill-founded, but also intrinsically dangerous. How would you like to be called constantly by all the media and by the ruling classes and by all the major institutions a racist with no respect because you were born white. And that is exactly what can happen, because now that book is being recommended and insisted upon in colleges, junior high, and high school, so children will be given an entirely different interpretation of their place in the world. Could you imagine the vulnerability of an open child's mind, as curious and inquisitive as it is, as impressionable as it is, to believe that you must engage now in self-deprecation, self-loathing, self-hatred for the rest of your life because your life is not worth anything because you are a racist? So says this one author. So says all of those who support her, which is a lot of people and all of the media and most of academia and our cowardly professors and all those who have bowed their head, consigning the strength of their character to the dust bowl of history. My God, do they have any idea what they're about to unleash? And on the opposite end, how long will the silent majority, more mature, most of whom are neither on the left or right, they've walked away from the right, they've walked away from the left when they saw their ideals betrayed and co-opted. How long will the independents, which double the number of any other group, stay silent when they see the very meaning and substance within a person's life diminished? What happened with the Bell's curve? It was attacked, and rightly so, for being racist. Now, as of today, there are those chanting and getting people to listen that language itself is racist. Yes, that is their newest screed. But also, history is racist. All history is racist, and therefore there should be no more history books written and no more history taught, nor language taught. All right? So what do you have if you have no history and no language? You have not just functional illiterates, you have completely created an entire society of young people who have not had the benefit of learning good history, real history, honest history, and especially history from the more nobles of our adults and wise men and women who've taken the time to parse out that which is political and propagandized, like Columbus, and replacing it with a better understanding of who was here, what happened to them, how lands were conquered, what were the consequences. Yes, we need history and we need language, but not based upon the current criteria. Even if a person can provide the evidence that their family heritage had many abolitionists who fought for freeing slaves, it makes no difference. Any statement, any gesture, any word uttered by a 10-year-old or an elderly person in their latter years can be used to cancel one's entire life. That means canceling all the goodness that a person may have done as a conscious and moral human being. To defend yourself that you're not racist only proves, based upon white fragility, that you're racist. Now think of those who have lived cooperatively, lovingly, lived in unison with people of all other races and cultures and beliefs, and have done so to the betterment of the world and the human family. Are you going to say that all that was just a game? It was illusion? No. You can't reverse that reality, but you can stop new people, younger people, from experiencing people at the dimension and dynamic of their character. You'll stop at the sight of their skin, and you will hold up your hand and say, "You racist, walk to the other side of the street because you're white." Is that what you want? Am I missing something when I suggest that that is racism? So the anti-racist can become the racist, but that is politically acceptable? One criticism often heard against today's younger generation is that they are historically illiterate. Well, that's an understatement. How can anyone say with moral and historical authority that the civil rights movement meant nothing and in a swoop of amnesia wipe it all away. 70 years of accomplishments for liberating people of color. Sing the largest group of African Americans, Latinos, and other cultures and other minorities have advanced educations, becoming medical doctors, becoming senators, secretaries of state, presidents of the United States, heads of major corporations, heads of educational institutions, and very, very strong-willed people who have determined that their own efforts count, and they have. Where the color of one's skin did not limit anyone as a human being. Tens of millions of Americans joyfully embraced each other in cooperation at every level of society. Now today's protests are negating this legacy as if it never existed. Yet when Clinton and Bush and Obama and Biden and now Trump, Democrats and Republicans alike, at the behest of the neocon and military-industrial complex, decided it was in their financial and ideological interest to invade countries, and almost always of people of color, and destroy them, no one shouted, "That is a racist policy, and you're racist for supporting it." No. Why isn't the populist rebellion now calling out our nation's addiction to military adventurism for systemic racism and the destruction of foreign cultures? When China carries out its persecutions and incarceration of its minorities, including Tibetans and Muslim Uyghurs and the Falun Gong, why do our youth blissfully continue to purchase the latest mobile phones and computers manufactured in China, a racist country, a totalitarian country? Instead, China is given a pass as fomenters of human suffering to have the luxury of the newest gadget to show our friends. And how is it not racist when thousands of small businesses are destroyed in riots, when the majority of the proprietors and owners are Black, Latino, Asian, or other cultures? Is any effort being made by the demonstrators, organizers, to restore their lives? No, their lives don't matter. In the meantime, the media covers these crimes by saying they are, well, there are no riots. Jerry Adler tells us that Antifa riots are a myth. However, tell that to the people whose life savings and means of livelihood have disappeared and who don't have a penny or an apology left. On a more pragmatic level, when a group of liberals and intellectuals principally sign a petition, including Noam Chomsky, to ask that we show respect for freedom of speech, they are attacked and ridiculed with the intent to destroy their reputations and to silence their freedom of speech. The disturbing question is whether those participating in the woke movement have contributed any understanding to the nation's crisis of income inequality and militarism at the level of Noam Chomsky. So the one person you want to shame and destroy, the one person who has spent his entire life being a beacon of freedom and justice, the one person who stood up for all minorities of all races, you now want to destroy him? What exactly have any of the most vocal protesters created in their lives that have made society a better place for their efforts? The best we can do is learn the historical lessons of how racial injustice arises and is not based solely upon color or biology. Rather, it is a question of power. The control of a privileged elite for the sake of the greater wealth and social political influence. That is the basis of how a society becomes corrupted, and it is a battle essential for transforming the destructive trajectory of our country that is not being addressed. When the central issues of woke culture rely solely upon how you feel and what you believe is right, then the society becomes divided between insiders and outsiders, because not everybody will share your personal sentiments and illusions. Wokeness avoids being held accountable for anything. There is no consequence to your words and actions, especially those that are harshly and painfully inflicted upon others, because you have such a dissimilar mind from the people that you are destroying. In the meantime, the clock is ticking away, and the seconds as the planet furls into being unsustainable for supporting its 7.8 billion citizens. If the woke left believes it has the power to bring Joe Biden and the powers behind him to the White House, you are correct, and you will win. But what happens once you are in power? Life will worsen, as it has done for each succeeding president in recent history. Will the legions of wokeness take credit for that failure? Certainly not. Undoubtedly, the woke culture perceives itself as being wise. But wisdom doesn't arise from being afflicted with ADHD, being self-righteous, being entitled, and finding one's worth is in how audaciously confrontational one can be towards an enemy. Our wise men and women today are those, and there are millions, who have seen many struggles and have incorporated their knowledge into making society more equitable, to bring jobs back, to erect means of protecting those who are disenfranchised by corporate and political greed and exploitation. Nevertheless, these are the reputations the woke want to destroy. Individuals who have the insight to analyze and discern the faulty thinking and self-cherished delusions behind canceling the lives of others, such as Noam Chomsky, Gloria Steinem, Chris Hedges, etc. It is an immoral mindset to believe that one has the right to destroy another's accomplishments regardless of whether one agrees or disagrees, or whether you're right or wrong. The current protest erupting throughout the nation is like Sherman's march to the sea, destroying everything and everyone, every animal, every house, every field in its wake, then take pride in that carnage. Unfortunately, Black Lives Matter, despite the truth and integrity of its stated mission, is run, in my opinion, by the wrong leaders, juveniles acting like belligerent teenagers who stamp their feet before locking themselves in their bedrooms. Except this time it's in the streets. During the past decade, and particularly in the last 3 years, there has been a full-throttle acceleration by the major social media firms Google, Facebook, Twitter, and especially Wikipedia to cancel voices and platforms that represent honest journalism. These are the voices of free speech that challenge the political weaponization of education represented in white fragility, medicine, and class struggle. Many sites such as Global Research, GreenMed Info, Truthout, Blacklisted News, and Anti-Media have been censored. Also canceled, shamed, and pillared are people with impeccable integrity for their criticisms against power, including Abby Martin and Chris Hedges. These are the people with the strength of character and wisdom to expose all levels of power engaged in hegemonic control, unmitigated greed, and the corruption throughout our two-party duopoly. Neither the political right nor left have done anything to challenge these breaches of public trust, and Biden will certainly continue this trend. In conclusion, so now we face a wave of nihilists in the streets and the internet spreading their apathy, frustration, hopelessness, and hostility against racism and a system that correctly needs to be criticized and dismantled and changed. But its lack of wisdom and maturity in displaying a mob rule that goes far beyond the threshold of honoring free speech and individual rights and the kind of empathy and compassion that is so much needed at this time in mass populist movements. Out of the collective ignorance that plagues the current uprising is the vulnerability to become unwilling tools of the powerful who are far smarter and wiser on knowing how to manipulate and direct trends that otherwise are not in their best interest. We are already witnessing this happening as hundreds of millions of dollars are dumped into Black Lives Matter by donors and organizations that should rather be targets of their protest. This is the cost of nihilism and being deluded by wokeness. Those who believe they are in power and control have been puppets all along. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening and have a nice day.